on this 14th day of March 2011 in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, a translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and His disciples. And this is Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of the Varnashram Dharma. Text number 32. So I'll just chant one word at a time or so. Eka eva paro yatma bhuteshu atmani avastitaha yatendur udapatreshu bhutani ekatmakani cha eka eva paro yatma bhuteshatman yavastitaha yatendur udapatreshu bhutanyekatmakani cha ekaha
one.
Eva indeed paraha the one supreme lord is situated within all material bodies and within everyone's soul. Just as the moon is reflected in innumerable reservoirs of water, the Supreme Lord, although one, is present within everyone. Thus, every material body is ultimately composed of the energy of the one Supreme Lord. I think we read this one yesterday. Alabhva na vishideta kale kale shanam kuchit. Labdva na rishyed dhritiman ubayam daivatantritam. If at times one does not obtain proper food, one should not be depressed. And when one obtains sumptuous food, one should not rejoice. Being fixed in determination, one should understand both situations to be under the control of God. Purport. Because we desire to enjoy the material body, the varieties of material experience bring us flickering happiness and inevitable suffering. We foolishly consider ourselves to be controllers and doers. And thus, through false egotism, we are subjected to the volatile feelings of the material body and mind. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilitamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So the most basic, one of the most basic principles of existence in this world is that we have to eat. We have to consume some food in order to continue in this body. And so eating is like central to every a living entity, every organism. Let's make the distinction. There's a living entity, the soul, and there's the organism, the body with the soul inside. And so every organism, every organism that's, after all, part of this material world, needs to be sustained. And eating is a huge part of that. You know, for the lower animals, you can see that so much of their lifetime, so much of their day, is spent in just securing proper nourishment. So in the human form of life, of course, everything is more refined, it's more complicated. And so we each have our favorite foods. We have a certain kind of taste that we like, others that we can't stand, even though others like it. One man's food is another man's poison. So getting some nice food is palatable, and enough of it is a huge part of what it's like to be materially satisfied. If you can't get that, no matter what else you have, you can't be satisfied. You'll be depressed here, or distressed, and you can ultimately be completely desperate for just eating enough. So here we see this most basic principle is spoken of here, that if one does not obtain proper food, enough of palatable food, one should not be depressed. You realize how strong one must be in one's self-realization, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, taking one's illumination within, being satisfied within, in other words, being in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to be indifferent, to be equipoised, one of Prabhupada's favorite words, equipoised, amidst enough food and not enough food, palatable food and not enough palatable food. This is a high level of detachment and tolerance. And on the other side, when one gets a sumptuous food, one has to be self-controlled and still eat just a little bit, enough to sustain one's body and soul together. So this is a sign of great advancement. And then the point here is made, by fixed determination, one understands both situations to be under the control of God. So he's describing here the Mahabhagavad, who sees everything in terms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pashyati sarvam chambai pashyati, that one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost to him and he's never lost to me. This is a description of the, as we mentioned last time, the Mahabhagavat, or the Uttama Bhakta, Uttama Adhikari, Prabhupada would call them. Wherever he sees, wherever he perceives, you perceive the energy of Krishna. You perceive all the living entities as within the greater energy of Krishna, and within every living entity is also the Super Soul. So how can you ever be forgetting the Supreme Lord? See, everything is seen as true as the energy of God. And therefore, everything reminds you of God. Everything reminds you of Krishna. And since Krishna is your beloved Lord, Vishram Purna Sukhayate. This is from a verse Prabhupada would quote often about Lord Chaitanya by Prabodhananda Saraswati, that one who's been empowered by the sidelong glance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by being fully immersed in the Sankirtan movement, the movement of congregational chanting, then for him, the whole universe is filled with happiness. Even though there are inevitable ups and downs, there are inevitable difficulties, as well as, materially pleasing experiences, still, everything is in this high state of bliss. He sees everything in terms of Krishna. Wherever you look, you see Krishna, 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 Krishna. That's the state of the Mahabhagavat. And naturally, he feels himself to be part of the great Sankirtan, the larger Sankirtan, of simply glorifying and serving Krishna with whatever is available. Sometimes we have a great facility, such as a temple, with many nice devotees to hear and chant and dance and chant. Sometimes we may be in a situation where we're all alone, even amongst non-devotees and those things which will normally drag our consciousness from Krishna. And yet, the inner consciousness is strong. And he sees that this is simply Krishna testing me, he's moving me here and there. And now I can still remember him. He's so kind. So this is the vision of the Mahabhagavat, and it's not easy to attain that. It means that there isn't a smidgen, a trace of desire to enjoy this material world. Because as soon as that desire comes, then the forgetfulness of Krishna has to be there. We were quoting this verse. Krishna Bahimukhaji, Bhogavanchakari. These two concepts are the same. Bahimukha Jeev means turning one's face away from Krishna. In other words, forgetting. In order to enjoy, Bhoga means enjoyment. But with the desire to enjoy Bhoga. You see, they come simultaneously. So this is the battle. That desire to enjoy separately from Krishna is the reason we're here. And now we should learn the lesson after all these births that it's impossible to do that. That very enjoyment is the source of extreme suffering. It's completely disproportional. The little pleasure that you get, sometimes I think of some of my godbrothers or even just contemporaries who at that time, just enjoying, young, early 20s, late teens, the senses are strong, enjoy this drug, that partner. That's the culture. It goes all the way back to the 60s. It hasn't gotten any better, Now, 40 years later, 45 years later, what's the result of a life like that? This drug, that drug, oh my God, goodness, now I realize I have Hep C. Oh my goodness, now my brain doesn't work very well anymore. Oh my goodness, through so many relationships, so many diseases, so much suffering. Was that flickering happiness worth it? Now you can ask. We read in the Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning it's like nectar, in the end it's like poison. But that end part is much longer than the beginning part. The beginning part may last a few moments, or you know, a few months, a few years at most. And then there's a lifetime, and in lifetimes of suffering. And on the other side, you see, you know, a few words, Hare Krishna. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the what's the suffering really? You know, these four regs. Is it really so impossible? Or these, you know, getting up early in the morning and refraining from these things. Yes, it's a little difficult at first because we're so habituated. But then there's an infinity, you know, eternity of enjoyment with Krishna. You see the difference? It's completely disproportional. The sense gratification gives you a little pleasure and a lot of pain. And Krishna consciousness gives you a little tiny pain and unlimited pleasure. So you do the calculation, the cost-benefit analysis. So here you see we see, you know, one of the basic principles of life is eating here. But yes, a devotee, he appreciates prasadam. You know, tasty prasadam is fine, taken in the mood of devotion, being pleased that Krishna tasted such nice prasadam. Now let me take the remnants. So even that nice experience of taking nice prasadam reminds you of Krishna. It's an act of love. Krishna is giving you the remnants. It's an exchange. And therefore, it doesn't bewilder you. You know, the same halva, they could sell it in the supermarket, you know. Instant halva. You put it in the microwave. They probably can create something like that. Same ingredients. It'll take you away from Krishna. It's maya. It's illusion. So everything depends on the consciousness with which we're doing it. And if that consciousness is full of Krishna, then we can be equipoised in these waves, you know, this ocean. I mean, who hasn't been conscious of the ocean in the last few days? The power of that ocean. You know, you're going along nicely, you know, thinking everything is fine. You're in some village in Japan. Who could imagine? Who was thinking that in 1 hour or one half hour or 1 minute, the whole world would come crashing down from the ocean? This whole world is like this ocean. It's an ocean, Bhavasagara, the ocean of birth and death. And we may be floating nicely in our little yacht, you know, maybe a good body and a good situation. But at any moment, monster waves coming up and capsize our happy little, fragile little situation. Then what? Then horror, terror, death. Oh, you know, death comes. Oh, I'm not dead. That's the big surprise when you die, that you're not dead. Right? Now what? Now where do I go? You don't have any control then. Whatever you've done, you've created your destiny, you go to the next situation. Who knows where it is for the materialist? So the whole idea is to be ready for those waves. They will come. You know, the positive and negative. The waves of some enjoyable thing will come, and the waves of suffering will come, and we need to remain steady, you know, it's equipoised in that. That's what this is all about. So how to do that? Well, we can turn to the Bhagavad Gita, as always. Krishna describes, you know, these three very cogent verses, Dhyayato Vishayan Pogda Sangastesha Pajayate. That as soon as you start meditating and being absorbed, which is our natural bent, you know, we're habituated to it, and Maya is very skilled at presenting us these objects for sense gratification. So that's a kind of meditation. Dhyayato Vishayan Pungsa, the person who's meditating on the objects of the sense gratification, Vishayan. So you become attached. No mystery there. Sangas, Sitechu Pajayate. Sangha means attachment. And from Sangha comes Kama, obsession. I gotta have it, gotta experience it. The intelligence is now practically dormant. Your senses are on fire. So kama teshu bhajayate grows up from that sangha, from that attachment. And then when that unlimited desire to enjoy is inevitably frustrated, anger. Kama krodo bhajayate. Depression is the flip side of anger. That's anger inside. When you can't do anything about it, you can't express your anger, you get turn it inside. And so you become depressed. you know, or angry. Krodat, krodat bhavati sammoha, and that produces complete bewilderment. You know? Sammoha smriti vibhrama, and your memory is lost. Is that you forget, further forget who you are, anything. And smriti bhangshat buddhi nasha. From the loss of memory, the intelligence is lost. And when the intelligence is lost, you're helpless. This is all we have, different from the animals, is the superior human intelligence. If we mess around with that and we cover it over and we abuse it through too much sense gratification, then we don't need it. You know, we don't need a human body for animalistic activities. We'll lose it. So we should culture spiritual intelligence and nourish it through hearing and chanting and self-control. So that's the situation everyone is in. Buddhi nashat, pranashati, completely destroyed. Completely destroyed means you're wallowing around again in the lower species. You know, waiting to come up again to the human form to get another chance. But we don't want to go back down there. So what's the alternative? Great verse. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran atavashe vidheyatma prasadam adigacchati. How to get the prasadam? You know, prasadam in general means the grace of Krishna. How to get the blessing of Krishna? So this is it. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu. This is describing the state of the person who is not being degraded by the two previous verses, by meditating on the object. So raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran. Even as the senses, indriyas, are moving around the sense objects, right? And the sense objects are bombarding you. Maya is bombarding you with all kinds of stimuli. You know, enjoy me, fear that, love that. This is what's going on. So even that's going on with the senses, you remain free of raga and dvesha. Two sides. Raga is material attachment, like kama, and dvesha is abhorrence, you know, to be equipoise. Atma vasha, being self-controlled. The self meaning, all meanings of atma. The senses, the mind, the intelligence, the soul, everything controlled, fixed on Krishna. How can it come about? How can we get this state? Vidheyatma. What's the matter? Oh, did the clock? The clock is right.
Oh, I had to pick up Mataji at 9 o'clock, and I thought maybe it was 9:15.
No, you're right. The clock is correct. So, atma vasha, vidheyatma. Vidheyatma, Prabhupada's immortal phrase, practicing the regulative principles of freedom. In other words, the process of devotional service called sadhana bhakti, and in the early stage, vaidhi bhakti or vidhi bhakti, according to rules and regulations. You know, and understanding where it's taking us. Just like any other discipline, at first it's difficult. You know, when you first start working out, there's so many pains and things. Oh, I got that vision in my mind, the buff body, you know, I'll be in good shape, therefore I'm going to undergo this pain. But there's a way to do it. You can strain a muscle, so you have some guide or some book that you read. There's a way, right? The marga. In the end, you get strong. At the end, you get equipoise, happiness, the prasadam, you know? And then he explains what the prasadam gives you. So here's the principle. Following the principles of bhakti yoga, one can become free of raga and dvesha, even as the senses are moving amongst the sense objects. And this is the essence of self-control. Then you get prasadam. Then what? Prasadam, prasade, savadukanam, hanir. Well, by getting the prasad of Krishna, all your unhappiness is destroyed. If it's true, that's worth striving for. But that's not the end of it. Savadukanam, hanirasyopajayate, prasanna chetasu yashu, and quickly you become joyful in heart. And that joy, that which ultimately grows into prema, you know, bhava and prema, that completely destroys any attachment to the material world. The great devotees, they couldn't care less, you know, about this sense gratification. Just imagine. Pasana chetasya buddhi paya patishtate. And your consciousness is fixed. This is the theme of this section of Bhagavad Gita, how to get this fixed intelligence. Tasya pragya patishtate. The pragya. So buddhi paya patishtate. Without this, there nasti buddhi yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavana. Without this process of yoga, which he described, vaidhi bhakti, vidhi, you know, then there's no fixed intelligence. Natyaksa bhavana, and there's no bhava, there's no bliss in Krishna consciousness. There's no entering into the realm of Krishna. And and how can there be peace without having that fixed consciousness? And without peace, how is there happiness? This is the thing. So at all keys, you see, the whole thing is surrounded on this Vaidhi Bhakti, accepting this, the principles of devotional service. So this is, again, describing this Mahabhagavat, Paramahansa. You know, these are some of the qualities here. And this is describing his indifference to, you know, eating or not eating. And so I'd like to share with you a couple of verses, more verses about this Mahabhagavat. Early 11th canto, the Navi Yogendras describe the different levels of devotees. There's these three famous verses. And after describing the Kanishtadikari, then they go on describing the Mahabhagavat. And the last three verses of this chapter are really sweet. They describe this state of you know, perfect Krishna consciousness. So the first one goes like this: Visuddhi Chibhavana Vibhava Heta Vepa Kunta Svitada Jidama Sarada Bivrigyat Nachalati Bhagavat Padada Vinda Lavanda Mashada Bhayaksa Vaishnavagriha. So there's a little irregularity which just adds to the beauty of the verse. Anyway, so Chibhavana Vibhava, the wealth within all three worlds, you know. Everybody is striving to eke out more, you know, get some more wealth, do a deal, you know, get a better job, somehow, you know, invest. They're trying to get a little tiny smidgen of the wealth that's part of this world, let's speak of the three worlds. So this is Tribhavana Vibhava. Vibhava is like Vibhu, opulence. So there's opulence throughout all the three worlds, the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems. We can't even imagine. So for the sake of that, Akunta Smriti, one whose remembrance of Krishna is unbroken. That's the key. Akunta Smriti, Ajitatma, Suradi Bhivamriga. He is Ajita, unconquerable, and he is the goal of all of the gods. All the devas are trying to achieve him. So, for the sake of all this wealth, Nachalati Bhagavata Padada Vinda Lamanamishadam Apiyaksa Vaishnava, the foremost devotee, the Mahabhagavat, will not agree to forget Krishna's lotus feet even for a split second. That if we're forgetting moment to moment. If someone would offer us $100 million, if you voluntarily forget, all right, what's the big deal? I'm always forgetting. I'll just forget and then I'll remember and I'll use the money for Krishna. He says, no. The pleasure coming from constant remembrance of Krishna, the nectar flowing, is so sweet. And he said, no, I don't want to cut that off for a minute. Just like the gopis, I want to blink so that they can't see Krishna for a second. You see the intensity there. So that's the first verse. Now, what's the result of this remembrance? So this is a very nice verse about the toenails, Krishna. So we did that one. So Bhagavata Udavukka Mangri Shaka Nakamani Chandaka Yanarastatape Ridikatna Mubasita Tampanaksa Sabhavati Bhagavat. No. Prabhavati Chanda Hivodhyakata. So what he says there is that Bhagavata Udavikramangri, he has lotus feet, you know, which perform great deeds. You know, the most obvious one is Vamana kicking through the universe. That's a great deed, kicking through the covering of the universe and letting the Ganges drip through, you know, the causal ocean. So but in general, his lotus feet are wonderful. They walk behind the calves. They're placed on the breasts of the gopis. He blesses everyone in the three worlds. So they're called Uruvikramangri. Shaka Nakamanichan. So the shaka of the lotus feet, the shaka are the twigs, you know. So it's the toes, and then you have the naka, the toenails. So there's a chandrika, there's a effulgence emanating, which is just like the moonshine. In other words, it's very soothing to the heart. Nirastatape, and it has destroyed every last bit of distress in the heart of the meditating devotee, who's got this constant remembrance of the lotus feet. So then tapa is heat, you see? These burning threefold miseries. We're suffering, burning threefold miseries. So we need the soothing, cooling rays of the moonshine emanating from Krishna's lotus toenails. That's what's being mentioned here. Which the great devotee is experiencing at every moment because he never forgets to load his feet. Remember, you won't agree to forget them even for a second. So, Riddhikata Mubasidatam, in a devotee who's meditating, how can there awaken any further distress in the heart? Because there's always drinking in that soothing moonshine from the lotus toenails. Punaksa, and then he gives an analogy. Just as, imagine, we got a desert here. So imagine it's middle of summer, you're out in this desert, you know, it's very hot, you've somehow survived. And then at night, the full moon rises, and it's very soothing and cooling. So the desert is the desert of the material world, and the moon rising is Krishna consciousness, which means ultimately full, you know, remembrance of Krishna. So that's the second one. And the last verse of the chapter is very nice. So now what does Krishna do on his side? This is all from the devotee. He's meditating, and he's experiencing the effulgence of Krishna's toenails, and he's very satisfied. But what does Krishna do on his side? So, visvajati vidhiyam niyasya sakshad hudada vishabha hatau bhiga ganasha pranaya vashanaya dudang vipadma sabhavati bhagavata pradhana ukta. So he says, Krishna will never give up the heart of such a devotee. He never agrees to leave that heart. He can't leave. Because he's so merciful. And the example given is that even if you chant his name indifferently by accident, he destroys all your karma. So that's just like a little bit of his mercy, but it's like, you know, so powerful. So then this great line, pranaya vashanaya dutang vipadma. This devotee has bound the Lord in his heart with the ropes of love, of prema. So pranaya vashanaya dutang vipadma. He's bound the lotus feet of the Lord in his heart with love ropes, and therefore Krishna can't leave. He can't leave. His feet are bound right into the heart. And this is the foremost devotee. This is the highest devotee. So with that experience, you can see, okay, just see the six Goswamis. They hardly ate at all. You know, it wasn't a question of whether they got sumptuous or not sumptuous food. It's just like, that was just like, okay, we have to eat something. Sometimes they forget to eat and sleep because they're experiencing it every moment, is, you know, the whole spiritual world in their heart. The reality of which this is a pale reflection. So that takes in of this whole idea here of how do we, you know, otherwise this seems like impossible for us. But if we understand how the nectar of Krishna consciousness becomes sweeter and sweeter and more overwhelming at every moment, so that there's no other desire left in the heart. The body is just a tool. Until it works until it drops, and who cares? That's the attitude of the great devotees. Any comments, questions, these few points? All right, let me put one of these. A saintly person should never let others frighten or disturb him, and similarly should never frighten or disturb other people. He should tolerate the insults of others, and should never himself belittle anyone. He should never create hostility with anyone for the sake of the material body, for he would thus be no better than an animal. The one Supreme Lord is situated within all material bodies and within everyone's soul. Just as the moon is reflected in innumerable reservoirs of water, so the Supreme Lord, although one, is present within everyone. Thus, every material body is ultimately composed of the energy of the one Supreme Lord. So, one thing I didn't mention, and we can end here, about this idea of the moon being reflected in bodies of water. This is another analogy of how the false ego works. That the soul, spirit souls, we're basically equal. We're all one, you know, we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We have our individuality, but we're all pure spirit, full of bliss, and eternal, full of knowledge. This is our. But now, this soul, the consciousness, is reflected, if you will, through different kinds of bodies. This is human bodies. There are many lower bodies. So it's just like the moon, full moon, you know, reflecting in a pool of water, say a pond. And there's some agitation. Say the fish are active that night, you know, when they come up. So the water is riled up. So what do you see? You see the moon moving here and there and distorted, isn't it? So the actual moon is there, fixed, not changing. But we see the moon as doing all kinds of things and being elongated and distorted. So similarly, we as spirit soul are fixed. We don't change. We're pure consciousness. But we're seeing ourselves, because of false ego, as reflected and distorted in all of these different bodies. And we're identifying with the reflection rather with the pure moon. So that's there's a reference to that here. The moon is reflected. Similarly, the Lord is also reflected. His energy is reflected everywhere. It seems to be changing, but it's actually one. Any final comments, questions? Any? Yes, Prabhu.
The age-old question is, how much independence do we actually have?
How much independence?
In our decisions? It seems like the most material nature constantly.
When we're bound up in the material consciousness, we don't have much. We have a kind of illusory freedom or free will. We can choose, you know, because as human beings we have a greater field of choice. We can choose different varieties of the modes of nature. But of course, what will determine that choice, what will influence that choice, is the mode that we're already in. You kind of tend to stay in the mode you're in until you get in another association, and then you can sink down lower, you know, or you can rise up higher if you're influenced that way. So we have a certain amount of choice, you know, but it's very difficult to, and that choice is really a fool's choice, because it's like we're in the prison house, and you can choose to be well behaved, so that you can get a few privileges and you can get more time in the yard and get a little better cell, you know. Or we can be very, angry and oppositional and go into solitary confinement, you know. But we're still in a prison, either way. So that's our choice. But the real choice, you know, the significant choice, is the choice of surrendering to Krishna or not, or choosing to be influenced by the internal energy, if you want to more technically, or allowing ourselves to continue to be influenced by this energy. So we have a certain amount of freedom. But the more that we get into the modes of nature, into the lower modes, is kind of the less freedom you have. It's just like my old analogy of the drug addict, because it's so pertinent. You know, we're all more or less addicted to things in this world. But the drug addict really shows it starkly. And that is, if someone gets into heroin or some serious drug like that, you basically lose your free will. You know, they, this is what they say. You know, I've never taken it. Is that you're so controlled by the drug that you'll, you know, sell your grandmother or your child, you know, or something, or just ignore them, or, you know, steal from your best friend or whatever. You know, you're compelled to serve the demands of the senses, which are now saturated with this drug. So you need an intervention. That's another thing. You need an intervention. Someone who has some feeling for you, who physically take you out of that, or, you know, shake you up, put you in rehab where you can't leave. So that, why? So you can get a better influence, you know. So similarly, we have an intervention, but you still have to agree to allow the intervener, whether it's the spiritual master or Krishna himself, to help you get out of the thrall, the control of our addictions, you know. And that's why Krishna, after all, the Bhagavad Gita says, you do what you want, you know. But if your intelligence is purified and strengthened through hearing the pure sound vibration of the Shastra, or the words coming from realized soul, then with that intelligence you can have determination, being fixed in determination, that's always a factor, to disobey the lower self and the addictions and actually begin to go into rehab. So we have a certain amount of free will, but it only becomes meaningful when we encounter the pure devotee and the pure devotion. Any other thing? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.